Yes, you're listening to Rumination Thursday on Law and Gospel on this August the 2nd in the year of our Lord 2018. And therefore, with us at this time is Pastor Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Yourself?
Oh, I'm good, doing great. I got my second cup of coffee.
No, that was last hour.
Oh.
Coffee hour isn't this hour. I don't even drink coffee.
Oh, I love it. I can't live without it.
Boy, that's interesting. I won't even ask you what kind you're drinking, because we have an important issue to talk about that you alerted me to, about remarks delivered by the Attorney General of the United States.
Yes. I thought that fit very well into what you were discussing yesterday, where, you know, people were discussing different issues about religion and lifestyles and things of that nature.
Yes, a woman was writing to me about that she's in a Lutheran church, and she had another woman criticize her for her pro-life stance and also for her stance against homosexual behavior. And this made her feel really uncomfortable. And so what did the Attorney General, what's his point that he's making?
Well, his point, he had a 25-page memo. His point being is that they have a right under their religious principles to speak out that, a freedom, what we call the freedom of religion, that they can speak about that as long as they're not hurting or harming a person, you know, physically. I mean, words, of course, you can get in all kinds of lawsuits, but basically you could go out and practice your religion without fear of reprisal from the government.
Yes, one of his quotes was, "Our founders," and he's talking about the United States, "gave religious expression a double protection in the First Amendment. Not only do we possess freedom to exercise our beliefs, but we also enjoy the freedom of speech." And it reminds me of a Professor Peterson at the University of Toronto who refused to abide by a Canadian law that forces you to use specific pronouns for transgendered people. And the way you have to use them, you use them the way they prefer to be referred to. And there's about 60 different pronouns. And so he was told that he should have those on his phone. And when he meets someone that he knows is transgender, what he does, he looks up his phone to see what their preference of pronoun is. And he refused to do that because he says the first time in English Constitution and jurisprudence that you are forced to go against your free speech and you are forced to use specific speech, and he just totally disagreed with that.
Now, there's a list of about 19 points that he makes, and probably the one that comes closest to that is point number 9, government may not interfere with the autonomy of a religious organization. In other words, they can't restrict interdenominational disputes about doctrine, discipline, qualifications of membership. And they, one of the examples that they gave was that you can't have a Catholic seminar, seminary, the government saying you got to have female priests.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know when this all first broke, gay marriage and this kind of thing, there were actually pastors in our own church that were worried that they'd be forced to marry. And I said, no. We have in the United States this double protection, not only religious freedom, but also the freedom of speech. And even now today, we Lutheran pastors can refuse to marry people if they don't meet the requirement of the church in getting married. So there's no way, I said, that this kind of thing is going to be changed around in the United States because of the various amendments. And I think this kind of really proves that at least under this administration, we don't have any worry that pastors are going to be forced to participate in a gay marriage.
No, they came up with what they call the principles of religious liberty, and then after that, you got four or five pages of how this is to be implemented in the Office of Attorney General and U.S. Attorneys, and then their appendix cites a lot of legal kind of cases that back up what they're saying.
Do they ever cite the Baker case?
I didn't have time to read through to see whether they had the Baker case, but the Baker case was this year, and the memo came out in October 6th of 2017. But in relation to that, they did cite the case of that Missouri Synod Lutheran Church that had the playground with the spare tires that were cut up to use for the playground.
And what was that case about? Why did the church go to court over that?
Well, there was government funds being sent for places that set up playgrounds with these tires so that when the kids fall, they didn't quite,
hurt themselves.
Hurt themselves. And Missouri Synod Church had applied for that, and they were denied that. They took it to court, and they won the case. And that's one of the sightings that we can't discriminate against the religion.
Yeah, I heard another similar one, although I don't think it was in anything that we've looked at, where when a tornado, say, hits a place, the government often will come in and help rebuild the houses, and it was denied to a church who I believe went to court, and that was overturned so that the church could even also get government funds because of the tornado.
Well, what I read in reading this is if they give funds to, say, a secular organization, like the Boys Club or the Girls Club or something like that to rebuild, then they can't deny it to a church.
Interesting. What other kinds of things will this make an effect on?
The other one that I wanted to get to was about hiring practices within the church or your schools. And they cite a Lutheran school can hire Lutherans to teach Lutheran doctrine, or if they hire other Christians to teach within their system. Excuse me, that they can require them to adhere to the Lutheran doctrine.
Yes, we've got, for example, some parochial schools. We simply don't have enough teachers that have been trained. So there are some teachers that are teaching, say, kindergarten or grade one or two, where religion isn't quite as deep as it is in the other grades. And even here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod headquarters, they hire even non-Christians to do tasks that aren't involved in religion, like secretaries or people who answer the phone and this sort of thing. And I don't have any problem with that at all.
At all, as long as they agree to abide by the Lutheran doctrine.
No, they don't even have to do that.
Really?
Yeah, if you're answering the phone... somebody says, I'd like to talk to the president's office. All they do is dial the phone. They never answer questions of a theological nature.
So they wouldn't answer what the genus minus Scotum.
Yeah, I think the Lutheran doctrine thing applied to those who were actually teaching.
Yes.
Yeah, not just various. For instance, we have landscapers here. And when I go by, I don't stop them and say, are you Lutheran? we couldn't care less if they were Lutheran, if they do a really good job in taking care of the landscaping.
Right. Another one was the freedom of religion extends to persons and organizations. So you're practicing your religion, and you can also practice it through your churches or religious denomination or religious organization, your school. And here was the other kicker. private associations, and even businesses in the practice of their religion.
You know, there's a case in St. Louis. I don't know which way it's going to go, because two lesbians are trying to get into an old people's home, and they have a deal at that home that the only married couples they'll receive are those where there is a man and a woman. And so I'm sure they're going to take that to court. Any indication from what you've read as to how at least Sessions would agree with or which side he would take on this?
You know, I you mentioned that to me the other night, and I kept reading up on it. And that one, I think, is still up in the air, because it really comes down to living accommodations.
Yes.
You know.
Well, I used to rent out homes, and if I did a public advertisement, then I came under different laws than if I did it privately. And publicly meant that you weren't permitted to stop anybody from renting from you. Regardless of their race, regardless of their culture, regardless of their sexual orientation, etc. So I was real careful never to go public in advertising when I had these houses available.
And wouldn't you think to a certain degree that you have to be careful in those areas, you know, especially grocery stores, and you're the only store around for 50 miles, and you deny somebody, you know, food and comfort and things like that. That to me would seem to be a bit of a problem.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If it's not impeding on your religious teaching, and that's
right.
What was happening with the baker who refused to bake a cake for the gay wedding, it was impeding on his religious beliefs. I don't see, for example, if I owned a grocery store, I wouldn't have a problem finding out that one of my cashiers is a homosexual, because he's not up there telling people what lifestyle they should follow. He's just letting them go through and giving them a bill for their groceries.
Right. Another one that I ran across was government may not restrict acts or abstentions because of beliefs that they display. When basically what that means is, like for instance, in our national parks, if they distribute political leaflets in a park, they can't forbid religious organizations from passing out their leaflets.
Yes, there was one that he himself mentioned in his abbreviated comments. Would you please explain the background and the litigation involved with Little Sisters of the Poor?
Oh, yeah, Little Sisters of the Poor. A Colorado court had told them that they had to give contraceptive health insurance to as a prerequisite for some of their employees, or all their employees, and
what did the health insurance necessarily include?
Well, it would include getting the morning after pill for contraceptions.
So abortion. And the sisters refused to do that?
Yes, and the sisters refused to do that and took it to court. And he cited that as a case that they should not be held against the religious values for saying no to that.
Yeah, specifically he says the government has no business telling the Little Sisters that they must provide an insurance policy that violates their sincere religious beliefs.
Another one that's fairly similar to that I ran across.
Yeah.
Was an archdiocese that wanted to publish an ad that said "Joy to the World" and "Merry Christmas," and the local newspaper or magazine or whatever it is wouldn't put it in, and the courts held that they couldn't do that.
Well, now that's interesting. Because what if that newspaper has said that it is contrary to our religious beliefs? They wouldn't have the right to refuse that?
I see what you're talking about.
See, what bothers me, what if somebody wants to put something in the Lutheran Witness, an advertisement that we disagree with on a religious ground? I think maybe there's a difference between religious publications and private newspapers.
Yeah, it would fall under the religious values, you know, and your teachings, and that was under one of the other statements. This one really had to do with a public newspaper.
Yes, okay.
It probably published all kinds of secular different opinions and value systems in there. So
now, talk is one thing. Has any action occurred?
Well, yeah. You know, the cases that he's citing in there, like the Little Sisters, that Lutheran church with the tires, Hosanna Tabor was one up in Michigan that was Missouri Synod. They cite all these cases. These are cases that have gone before the Supreme Court. And
have there been any indictments or convictions?
Well, yeah, he mentions in his little speech there that there were 11 indictments and 7 convictions where there was arsons or threats against churches or institutions of religion. That's on one level of the Attorney General. On another level, the civil rights, there were 12 indictments in the Civil Rights Division, so...
How is the Civil Rights Division? I'm kind of ignorant of that. Different.
Yeah, I am too. But there's your civil rights versus just regular law, I guess, that you have.
Interesting. So he was probably well received when he did this speech.
I would say so, especially among the various religions.
Yes. And it's not just Christians that he is supporting. It's like Muslims or Jehovah's Witness or
Hindu,
etc. Was there a Hindu case?
Yes, yeah. He mentioned a Hindu case where they wanted to buy some land to put up a building.
Yes.
And they were denied that.
Oh, really?
Because it sounds like the city or the location made zoning laws to keep them out. And they couldn't do that.
Yeah, if they save particularly for a Hindu religion. For example, I remember when we had to build the International Center, they tried to build it at the seminary in Clayton, where we had a lot of empty property, and the Clayton City Council denied that request, so we ended up building it in Kirkwood, where we found some land. But are you saying that under this particular Attorney General, the city of Clayton, you see, there were a lot of complaints by residents that it would cause too much traffic and such, and maybe that's an appropriate reason why something cannot be built somewhere.
That could be, but I would say under this new Attorney General Sessions that they would have to allow that to be built. They'd have to show cause that it would damage the area with too much traffic, and they'd have to reroute roads and widen them and things like that.
But that would mean that no kind of building, store, or anything could be put up if it had the same negative effects.
Right. Yeah. No, you would be correct in your thinking there. But I would definitely say that where if it's a piece of secular ground, so to speak, and they want to build, you can't deny, you can't kind of lock them out. But if it's a piece of religious ground, it could even be a farmer. You know, we've had farmers give ground to some of our colleges that we build.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
With the intention of building a Lutheran school there. So.
Well, if anything, this shows the importance of elections. That imagine the next Attorney General, whomever he might be, could reverse a lot of this stuff. Because what Sessions is doing is coming out of his office as Attorney General. This isn't really going through the legislature, is it?
No, he's taking this out of his office itself and instructing his attorneys how he wishes to see things take place.
In fact, I think here's what he writes. He says, this is animated by that same American view that has led us for 242 years, that every American has a right to believe, worship, and exercise their faith in the public square.
Yes.
That's really critical, because we've been told, yeah, you can keep your views on abortion and homosexuality, but keep them in your church. Don't go public with it. And he's making it very clear that, no, here in the United States, that's, in fact, he gives a little history of why people came to the United States, because they were fleeing a religious persecution that would not permit them to speak as they believed.
Right, yeah, that's, here in his memo is point four, Americans do not give up the religious freedom of religion by participating in the marketplace, partaking in the public square, and interacting with government. And he even goes on further to say, in explanation, is they don't give up their religious liberty when they're providing or receiving social services, education, or health care. So if they receive a government program, they don't have to give up their religious principle.
This really helps the lady who wrote me yesterday, concerned of the negative repercussions she was receiving when she stands up for the Bible. What the Attorney General is saying, though, you're permitted to do that. It doesn't mean that the people are going to agree with you. But like in Jesus' case, probably 60% of the people he spoke to disagreed with him and never did become believers. But that part of the harvest that did grow, that quarter, 25% or whatever, is what we can expect. But don't expect, when you get in the public square, that people are going to listen to you.
Right. But I think the point, really, you know, for me, is the freedom of religion to go out and speak the gospel. Because if you can speak the gospel, the Holy Spirit can work on their hearts.
Yes. And there's a lot of areas where the gospel isn't involved that we can still do a lot. I think the pro-life movement has been wonderful in using science and medical people to show that this really is a human being in the womb. And this, not, you don't need to use the Bible for that, or with 6-day, 24-hour creation. There are some great groups out there who are using proper science to show that evolution is just a myth.
Oh, there's also the Clinton guidelines. Did you hear about those?
No.
During President Clinton's guidelines, he issued an executive order that it was okay for federal workers in the workplace to have on their desk, private desk, religious materials or religious items. They could even wear them in on their coats or dresses or shirts and discuss it with people. Yeah, and invite them to their worship service.
Well, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, Sessions even went further to say that that would be a guideline that in the private practice that they could be followed in many of our secular organizations.
Yeah, it really gets tough when, and I'm working with some people right now who work in a office. And, of course, their views are against homosexuality. But there are some people in the office, workers who are gay. And they're told that if they speak out against being gay, that they could be fired.
Yeah.
Will this have an impact on that now?
I would say so.
Interesting.
I would say so.
Yeah. Yeah, it really takes a careful understanding of Christianity to do that in a appropriate way. So you don't do it in a way that Jesus would not have done it.
Right. I think that's the key, is be very, very much open to discussing with them and in a nice way, presenting your case.
Well, again, we thank you for bringing to our attention this important facet. We're at the end of our program. Think of something for next week also. This is Pastor Wes Reimnitz, who indicated that to us, and I think it was well worth the program's time. Thanks so much, Wes.
Thank you.
Okay. And he'll be back next Thursday, God willing. I'm Tom Baker. Tomorrow is Open Mic Friday. Maybe you had a question about something I said or Pastor Reimnitz said. You can phone in tomorrow and ask about it at 1-800-730-2727. Until then, I'm Pastor Tom Baker, and wish you God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday morning at 9:30 on Worldwide KFUO. For a tax-deductible gift to Law and Gospel, please make your check payable to Concordia Mission Society and mail it to Tom Baker, P.O. Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri, 63132. To give online, visit lawandgospel101.com or call toll-free 1-877-267-1962.
Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.